You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Bard College Distinguished Writer in Residence Teju Cole is a Nigerian-American novelist, essayist, art historian and photography columnist for the New York Times. His debut novel, Open City, was highly praised, and his recent collection of essays, Known and Strange Things, was named one of the best books of the year by both Time and The Guardian. Hi Teju, are you there?
Hello, I am. Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Nice to talk to you.
Good, good. Nice to talk to you too. So are you in Auckland at the moment?
I am in Auckland.
How are you finding it?
It's lovely. It's great. I mean, the weather could be better, but I think it's already clearing.
Yeah. Looks like it'll get there by the end of the day. Yeah. So just to start, your essay collection, Known and Strange Things, came out last year. It takes in a whole lot of subjects from Shakespeare, Virginia Woolf, Naipaul, Barack Obama, Boko Haram, Instagram. How did you approach kind of weaving all of those different subjects into this one book that does feel very coherent?
Well, thanks very much for saying that. I think I'd been gathering these essays together for about 8 years, or I had been writing them for about 8 years, and I didn't want to make a book that had every essay I'd ever written. I wanted something that had a kind of narrative arc to it. But, you know, just out of knowing myself, knowing my own work, I did have a sense of returning to the same central themes over and over again, whether I was writing literary criticism or writing about photography or about travel or about politics. I keep returning to some of the same central concerns, so that helped me hold everything together, I think.
And talk to me about some of those central concerns.
Well, one of the things I think about a lot is when we say we, who are we talking about? How do we assume what constitutes the interpretive center of anything we might be doing? So that's a question I approach in very many different ways. If I'm looking at photographs by a famous photographer, for example, I'm concerned not only with the technical achievement or the subject matter, but what kind of picture of the world does it give, and what kind of viewership does it assume? And the same thing is true when I travel to another country and I want to write an essay about it. I think about the people there not as strangers and outsiders to me, but of myself as a kind of outsider to that scene, and to try to understand them on their own terms, with their dignity intact, but in a way that does not necessarily shy away from the dark aspects of that history, which then, you know, leads me to another of the themes I keep returning to, the question of what is buried under all the layers of reality. What are the things that we cannot see when we're looking at the world?
Absolutely. And you mentioned photography. You're also a photography critic at the New York Times. What was it that kind of sparked your interest in photography as a medium?
I think two things that developed simultaneously for me were an interest in being a photographer, making images with cameras, and at the same time an interest in writing about photography, the ways in which it's talked about. So, I don't know, maybe 13 or 14 years ago was the first time I took up a camera, but it was the first time I took up a camera and wanted to make images that lasted past their present moment, that were more than just taking pictures of family members or whatever. And at that point, I just sort of became obsessed, and I read all I could about photography. The history of photography, books made by other photographers, the way they approach their art. And so I gradually became somebody who had a certain arsenal of language and thoughts for thinking about what pictures we're doing. And at the same time, I was developing my own eye and my own art as a photographer. I guess these are two obsessions that just sort of developed together. And these two obsessions are very much connected to my own writing of fiction, because they're not simply about close observation, but they are about the disregarded, things that we think we've already seen, what might even look obvious. But this idea that if you look closer, there's always more going on. So that's really fed my love for photography.
Absolutely. And during the Writers' Festival, you'll be taking an audience on a virtual tour of the work of 12 of your current favourite photographers.
That's
correct.
Can
you talk a bit about a couple of those works?
you want me to give it away ahead of
just
time?
Just a little.
Okay. Well, I will, for example, be talking about the work of Taryn Simon, American photographer, who's one of her latest projects has to do with large format photographs of flowers, flower arrangements. And you just look, you enter the gallery and you see a large photograph of a flower arrangement in a bouquet, and there are many of these. But then you find out that she reconstructed these bouquets based on flower arrangements that were present at signings of major treaties. So she uses these flowers as a way of focusing our attention back on an historical event, but not by showing the people who were involved or by showing the main action, but by showing the decoration that was present, you know, when big corporations or major countries signed one agreement or the other that ended up influencing the lives of millions of people. I'm very attracted to that work right now simply because of the political moment we live in, because of the necessity of thinking about, again, what goes beyond the obvious and how do we commemorate or remark upon momentous events in a way that is not what would be expected. So that's Taryn Simon. Somebody else I'll be talking about is Georgi Pinkasov, who is a Russian photographer, whose work does not have quite the same kind of conceptual intensity or energy to it, but the work visually is just so mesmerizing to the extent that it becomes a kind of study in seeing. How do we see optics? How do we see the world? So his work really does amazing things with light and shadow and glimmering surfaces and drawing abstraction out of everyday life. You could send 100 people to a scene to go take photos of it, and Pinkasov's pictures will always be different because he seems to have a kind of preternatural ability to find patterns in visual phenomena where nobody else would have seen the pattern.
That's incredible. And you mentioned kind of where the US is politically at the moment.
Yes.
What kind of role do you think that writing and photography and art just in general plays in resistance, I guess? Is that, do you see that as a form of activism or something else?
Well, I mean, the answer to that is yes, but I'll give an answer to another question you didn't ask, which is that at this moment, I'm in Auckland, and this is the farthest away I have been from Trump since he was elected. I've traveled a lot, but I've never been quite this far away from him. And let me tell you, it's a great feeling. I might stick around. I might stay here.
Oh, I'm glad. But yeah, I mean, it's still kind of seeping into here, even that far away, though. It's ridiculous.
It really is. But the problem with being there itself, I mean, of course, it's important to be there because there's so much work to do and so many people we have to support. But the problem with being there is that you have to endure every sordid detail day in, day out. And we already had all of this for a full year before the elections. And now since the election, it's been every day. And at a certain point, you just think, this is actually not how I want to live out my days. This is not what I want to do with all of this year. I don't want to have to think about the details of this terrible self-destruction by the U.S. Every single day. And sometimes hour by hour, the news just keeps streaming in. So even though you do get the news here, it is also possible to sort of tune out and deal with what's going on here rather than what's going on over there.
Absolutely.
Even though, of course, they are connected. But
yeah, well, yeah.
But they're not exactly the same.
No, for sure. And so talk to me about social media. You're well known for your use of Twitter, although not for a couple of years now, and you also have an incredible, incredible Instagram. Love it so much. What is it about these platforms that appeals to you?
Well, the appeal is very straightforward, which is it's communicative, right? I mean, it's unmediated. We call it media, but in a way, it's media in the sense of getting the word out there. It's not media in the sense of somebody being between you and your audience. It's unmediated, and that's really, really interesting. With Twitter, it was that you could create a thought, craft a sentence, and send it out to thousands of people simultaneously without any vetting or anything like that. I haven't done Twitter in about 3 years, but when I was doing it, I thought this was kind of amazing. It was kind of a fulfillment of that late 19th century idea of the stream of consciousness. But of course, the stream of consciousness is only really interesting if there's a consciousness as well as a stream. What has happened in recent years is that there's a lot of streaming going on. The consciousness is very much in question. I don't think Trump would have become president of the United States without Twitter being there as free advertisement for his not simply provocative but sort of deeply violent and offensive view of the world. With Instagram, something a bit more interesting to me at the moment is happening, which is the ways in which images can create not a narrative but a sensation of flow, sequences of images. So that's something I'm exploring in my photographic work right now. I've always been interested in what images and words can do next to each other, and I've done quite a bit of that on Instagram. But recently, I've also been thinking about the ways just sequences of images with very little text support can also convey sort of psychological energies, which is what it really comes down to for me as a creative writer, as a photographer. How do we make work that somehow occasions a shift internally in the person who is receiving that work?
And a few years ago, you were tweeting and came up with the term white savior industrial complex. I know you're asked about this a lot, but it's relevant here as well. Can you talk a bit about how that came about and what that means?
Yeah, I mean, that just sort of came out of thinking about this question of gratitude, the idea that, let's say, for example, anything white people did for Africa should be received gratefully, which is a point of view that's a little bit common, but it is also based in a total denial of history, of the ways in which, let's say, the whiter nations have interacted with the darker nations. But I was looking at one very specific aspect of it, which had to do with young white Americans going off to places like Haiti or to places in Africa or to places in Asia, really sort of going in order to have a good time and feel like they were doing something great, making very little contribution to the places that they were going to, but really having a massive ego boost from having gone out there and helped the natives in a way that completely obliterates the humanity of those so-called natives, and of course obliterates their contemporaneity. Because when I see all this reporting about Africa and NGOs doing work out in Africa, I don't see an Africa that I know at all. And I've traveled to quite a number of places in Africa. So it tells a very narrow story about utter deprivation that ultimately is about the ego of the person telling the story. And in fact, I find that it becomes just another way of saying that, we're white, we're sorted out, and the blacks over there, they need to be led by the hand. So it was the condescension in it that led me to coin that phrase.
Absolutely. And just lastly, do you think that writers owe anyone anything?
Yes. We owe each other, any living human being owes each other, we owe each other the responsibilities of living in society. And for me, one of the key ones among those responsibilities is to be involved in the discussion of what society ought to look like. So that's a debt that's there. And that's not just writers. There's rights, there's responsibilities, there's the law, but the law is not a fixed thing. It always has to be altered and changed. But there's just, you know, the fundamental ethical question of what we owe to each other, which is always up for conversation and for debate. Now, beyond that, a writer's responsibility is to her art, is to make sure that the writing comes from a focused, a profound place, that the writing acts as a space in the noise of the world where something else can happen beyond the everyday.
Absolutely. Teja Cole, thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure to talk to you.
You too.
Bye. You're tuned into The Wire.
Thank you very much to Amanda for doing that interview, and also thank you, Teju, for joining us. If you're interested, you can catch his talk happening on Friday. So this Friday, 1 o'clock, ASB Theatre at the AATS Centre, where he'll be talking about Known and Strange Things a little bit more in depth. So that was just a little teaser for you. So yeah, head along if you're interested.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.